field. Robert is there. And the Sox snap a four-game skid with a four-run ninth.
Unbelievable day. Crochet was as good as advertised. So was Webb, but he gave way to the bullpen in the ninth inning. The White Sox took advantage. They got a couple of walks, a couple nice at-bats from Robert Jr. and Benintendi. Vaughn with an infield single, and then a couple huge at-bats by Lee and Sosa. Lee coming back to the Bay Area and doing some damage. You know that's got to make him feel good.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Oh, dude, I heard the White Sox won last night. I am Ranji on The Score. I'm going to be with you until 9 o'clock, so final hour. You have less than an hour, actually, to get in your yelling at me. 312-644-6767. Baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. I'm a T-Mobile guy. It's time to go to the guest line. Let's visit with Ryan McGuffey, who is with NBC Sports Chicago. He produces live events. He's been doing so for a long time. He's fantastic at his job. Also co-host of White Sox Talk podcast. And it's time to talk with Guff, because I haven't spoken about the White Sox in a while now. What are we doing, man?
Is this an invitation to yell at you? I'm also
yes.
A T-Mobile guy. Okay.
Yeah, hey, T-Mobile, let's go.
Hey, double plug. Let's go. Yeah, let's yell.
Let's go.
Let's yell together.
Bro.
They won, so everyone's happy for a day? Or what,
no.
Look,
I want to know how you feel about this, because I am watching this team from a distance. I am now, they've got 31 wins. They're, Dude, they are 40 and a half games out of first place. And I don't care. It is striking to look at the standings on August 22nd and see a team 40 games out of first. But, I want them to lose as many games as possible. That's where I am. Where are you?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so I feel it's kind of like a loaded question in some ways, even though it shouldn't be, but I'm with you. Like, looking at the standings every day almost doesn't feel real. Like, I'll look at them sometimes and just stare at it and be like, really? That's just not possible to be 66 games under 500. Or it is. And, I'm sympathetic for the players, because it's just that's not something you want to be tied to, you know, that the historic and the futility and all time, anything, you know, losing streaks, tying the 88 Orioles, et cetera. But if they were to go 500 the rest of the year, let's be honest, that's not happening. But that just is like, okay, like what, there's really nothing there. It's just kind of blah. Right. I mean, I think at this point you kind of know what the bright spots are, what's worth watching. You know, Crochet's giving you four inning starts. Who knows if Drew Thorpe's situation with his injury, I think Jonathan Cannon's a watch. Kai Bush looks like a watch. But, I mean, outside of the young starters, I like watching. I wish Dominic Fletcher would have been given 140 games to play and just plug in and play him. And if everybody else was hitting 235 all year, what was the big deal of actually having a right fielder have a possible, I don't laugh at what I'm saying here, gold glove caliber defense? I mean, he's amongst the leaders in defensive runs saved and the fewest amount of innings for the season. But I never understood that. Like, I don't know if Pedro didn't like him or what, but I didn't like the up and like the guy comes in April, was here for 3 weeks. He's sent down for the bulk of the year. Now he's getting a shot to just kind of get out there every day and play. There's a lot of things that I don't understand of like how we got here. There's certainly that, like there's a whole avenue as to why we're here. But yeah, I don't know like what I'm rooting for. That's a long-winded way of not answering your question, because I honestly don't know. You know what I'm rooting for, Ranji? The end. I'm rooting for the end. I hate rooting for the end of baseball season, because I know what that means for weather and the days get shorter, but this thing feels like it's been a 10-month journey.
No, I think the answer, the long answer, it is a, is an answer in itself, because it is it, looking at it, it's almost like a somebody says to you, what do you think of the White Sox? What do you think they should do? What are they? What's the deal? And you just, your reaction is, dude, I don't know. And then you go through five different scenarios or eight different things. You're like, I don't know. It's almost like having, and I don't have any kids, but I can imagine that it is like having a kid that's a problem in the house, problem at school, problem out in the world. And somebody says, how's Timmy doing? You're like, I don't know, man. He's like, he never comes home. He's always running out of money. I always have to bail him. I don't know, dude. I feel like it's kind of like that.
Yeah, it's probably a pretty good comp, because as you can imagine, I have a lot of buddies asking me this exact question, and I'm chasing my tail over here. So, and, you know, again, how they got here is, this is a top-down thing, and now they're staring at the worst record in the history of the game. I mean, it's baffling. I think if you would have told any of us at the end of 2021, when the White Sox got knocked out of that ALDS in four games, whatever, they lost 3-1, so I guess it was four games.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
If you would have said, hey, it doesn't matter, no. If you would have said, in 3 years, this team will be the worst team in the history of baseball, no one would have believed you. And that's with, like, knowing the roster had some flaws. Tony La Russa was the manager. But there's no scenario that you could have painted that said the White Sox are going to be the worst team in the history of baseball. Yet, here we are. And while, yes, the farm system is looking better, it's certainly top-heavy. And Ronji, this is no different than when you hosted pre- and post-game shows 20 years ago. And it was always a top-heavy pitching organization. Yeah. Dude, well, you were getting yelled at for a 91 season. Imagine if you were doing it.
That's right. Hey, like, hey, you were not. My first year was 06 when they won 90 games. And you would have thought, that was the worst. After they had just won a World Series, you would have thought that was the worst team that ever walked Earth.
I blame you. I mean, it's very simple. Yeah, I mean, I think about that sometimes. Like, you had a multiple 40 homer players. That's what, you know, bring it to current. I just don't see a White Sox player hitting 40 home runs ever again. That's how dark this is. And I know that's a little crazy, but it doesn't seem all that crazy, because while the pitching looks good and bright and the future looks good, what's this lineup like? I mean, you can't tell anybody that Luis Robert's going to be here in 2 years. And after Luis Robert, who did show us one season of, you know, MVP type, you know, an MVP type season. I wouldn't say MVP, but maybe top 10 MVP candidate on a good team. Where's the power coming from? It's not coming in the minor leagues. It's not coming from the draft, because you just went pitching again. You're going to have to figure it out. And I thought, okay, well, they're going to trade. All their trades are going to be circled around bats. And maybe that's what they'll do with Crochet in the offseason. But again, how many top-heavy bats are you going to get for one player when teams are not – I think I read something earlier, either this week or last week, that no top 100 prospects were traded at the deadline. Like, that's crazy, right? I mean, that also tells you where we are in the game and how the teams are certainly putting a priority on money and years of control, et cetera. So – at some point, you're going to have to open up the checkbook and say, look, our strength is pitching. We're really good developing it, certainly from a left-handed standpoint. And we need to fix our other problems by throwing legit money at some of these players, because I just don't see a lineup that's capable of keeping up with the Joneses in the near future. I just don't.
Ryan McGuffey, NBC Sports Chicago, co-host of the White Sox Talk podcast, is with us on 670 The Score. Do you think the possibility of, or them actually becoming the worst team in baseball history in terms of record, do you think that as an organization or ownership would be motivated in such a way to change the way they operate, change their level of aggressiveness, or do something? Do you think the shame will do anything for them?
I just don't. If this doesn't, what would? Because it's a failed rebuild, right? I've often said that if you were presenting me, if I were a GM of a team, and you came and if I'm the owner and you're the GM, and you come to me and say, hey, look, I think we're in a position we need to tear this thing down and rebuild it. We're going to get our farm system right. We're going to add a few star players, and we're going to be right here in the thick of things for five straight seasons, like XYZ ABC franchises. And I, as an owner, are going to go, what about the Chicago? What's preventing us from being the Chicago White Sox? Because they're the model of how not to do it. So that failed, right? Like, that would have been enough for me to say, okay, we just spent 6 years on that. We won two playoff games. And now, at the tail end of all of it, you're going to be the worst team in the history of baseball. Like, I don't know how much more motivation you could need. You know, like, I just don't get it. And I don't think next year, certainly, I don't expect the White Sox this offseason to go out and open the checkbooks for free agents. I just, if anything, they'll have a smaller payroll while they develop some of these guys and really look at 26. And I think 27 at this point, to really be that first season when you're coming back out of it again. But again, that's only 3 years from now. We just talked about 3 years ago and being in the ALDS and winning the 93 games. And I guess in theory, 3 years from now, they could be sitting there again doing that, having a 93-win season. But that seems so damn far away than it did in 2018 when you were looking at 2021 going, hey, 2021, they're going to win 93 games. There was actually like a methodical system in place that was reasonable, that had guys on the come, and you thought, okay, this makes sense. Now, they all flatlined when they got here. But you're telling me that now, and I'm just going, I mean, your payroll next year is what, 120-ish? And I'm ballparking, like, without looking at the guaranteed money. Maybe they're trying to get Andrew Benintendi off the books in the offseason. So I don't know, Chris. I don't, because I'm motivated. So, you know, I've often said, in like the whole Eloy thing, people are like still holding that against me because he's doing okay in Baltimore. I don't think he's like, he's a ton of singles. Great. Good job. You can't care more than the players, than the organization. And sometimes, you know, it feels like the outside, we all do. And I'm motivated, but I don't have to spend the money and say like, hey, here's who I could identify guys and the possibilities of how to fix it. But at the end of the day, I mean, my checkbook isn't going to be impacted by it.
I don't even think, Ryan, that it's about the players wanting it or that. It everything is, like you said earlier, it's top down now. And I spent, anybody who has listened to this station in the past, maybe some people listening tonight have no idea who I am, but you know, when I did that job for a decade, I used to take a lot of heat for being too positive on them and not being critical enough and maybe defending them too much. And I will admit that I did defend them a lot, but either a couple of things have happened here. Either I was blind then, or they were really trying back then to win within certain parameters. And, you know, we talk about that all in season where they brought back Konerko and they get Adam Dunn, who was stunk. But, you know, at the time, that was a really good pickup because the guy was hitting 40 home runs a year for about a decade. And so you figured, well, coming to the cell, he's going to do that here easy. And he was terrible. So I had this feeling that they were actually trying. So either I was stupid or they were trying then and are still trying now, but they haven't adapted in 15 years, or they stopped trying. It's one of those three things. And it is possible that I am still stupid, and it's one of the other two things too. So whatever it is, it the way they operate now feels different to me than the way they operated between 06 and 2012.
Well, I feel like they're chasing a little bit more now. I hear you, because I think I'm one of those three things too. So maybe I'm stupid. I certainly have been accused of, you know, making excuses, carrying the water is a big one. A lot of people like to throw at me, water carrier.
Oh, so you're getting it now too? Yes.
Oh boy. Yeah. When you left, it was a hold my beer situation. Yeah.
Yes. So awesome. Yeah, I'm glad it's you, and I hope it's Chuck. I hope Chuck's getting a lot of it too.
Yeah, Chuck gets a lot of it, but I mean, he also, you know, he's able to, he can thread the needle a little bit. And speaking of thread the needle, I think they were doing that a lot more when you were talking about that decade. They had top heavy talent. You know, they did. I mean, the Sales and the Canericos and, I guess Burley, it's like, in some cases, AJ, like all the way through, even when Burley was gone, they had like five or six guys, but then like the depth of the team was never great. And that's why they always finished like 83 and 79. You know, they get so close and they get to September and they would just not have enough. But they were throwing money at the Adam Dunns, and they were throwing, and look, from a 30,000 foot view now, all these years later, we can be like, oh, terrible signing. But you're right. Adam Dunn had the resume and the DH. Well, I guess in theory he wasn't playing DH because they hadn't been a university yet, but he fit the bill of a guy you bring here. But then they were trying to they spent all that time trying to bring guys to the DH role that weren't really DHs, like Adam LaRoche, who had never done it before. And it was like a trickle down effect it got to the point where they had nothing else to do other than to try the rebuild, because they were looking all around and teams were successfully doing it. The Astros, the Royals, the Cubs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there were so many different teams tearing it down and rebuilding it back up. And when you're looking 8 miles south and you're seeing it happen on a team that you're already in the shadows of, and then that team wins it all and all of these kids come up and they all just hit. I remember thinking in 16, like, there's no way, like, they're all going to be good. And they kept coming up and they kept being better than the one before them. And obviously they had the problem of not being able to keep guys, but it doesn't look like all that much of a problem now. But my point is, for a team that cares a lot, for an organization that cares an awful lot about what the Cubs are doing, and the White Sox have been that team, to see that happen in your own backyard, I think that's what gave the green light to the White Sox, to the front office, to say, let's try this. Let's go. I think the Cubs really did play a role. And it wasn't all like 4 or 5 years seems like a long time, and it was, but at year three of that rebuild, it felt like, okay, like things are coming, guys are getting here. I mean, a standing, it's going to feel like a generation ago that Yoan Moncada got a standing ovation for a walk in his first plate appearance. I mean, I was at that game. I was at the Kopech debut, and now again, like, those were times where I was like, this. I remember leaving 2020 Sox Fest thinking, this is it. Like, this team's going to take over the city for the next 6-7 years, and it's going to hit. And then COVID happened, and it's like, COVID is like the 1994 strike for the White Sox. I mean, COVID just kind of feels like it changed everything. And it changed certainly how, like, we, as just a normal human being, lived our lives. But, like, I feel like that was almost like a strike-like impact, that it just changed the entire direction and navigation of the future of the White Sox. And even though they did make the playoffs in 2020 and win the division in 21, it just feels like that's where it stopped.
I agree with you, but I can't let them have that excuse, because there was actually a World Series winner in 2020. So,
the Dodgers are happy about that trophy. So, can't disagree with that.
And was it Justin Turner coming back on the field with COVID? Was it him?
It was, come Turner, back to the celebration. That was
He tested positive for COVID right after the game, came back, and was like, everybody, I'm sick. Hey, Ryan McGuffey. Oh, by the way, before we let you go, how about Chris Sale? This dude is the way he's pitching right now.
Yeah.
Do you? I'm happy for him. I'm glad that's happening. He could legitimately win a Cy Young this year, finally. But it's sad to see it not happening here.
I know, and you're seeing success kind of across the board. Like Kopech, I'm ecstatic for Kopech. I will say that I did buy 20-1 futures on Chris Sale to win the Cy Young in April. Yeah,
whoa.
So I'm just gonna sit over here and I probably just screwed it big time by saying that publicly.
Buddy. Yep.
But
you're effed.
But it felt good saying it and having a good shot of it on August 22nd.
Ryan McGuffey, it's great to talk to you. Miss talking to you, buddy. And when I'm back in Chicago, I'll come see you.
I look forward to that day. I will race and yell loudly at you. And then we'll share break.
I have gotten multiple on the score text line, multiple fire Greg Walker texts tonight.
Oh my God, I would do anything for Greg Walker to be a part of this franchise.
You're right. Oh yeah. There we go. Go back to 2006. Oh, you guys want him fired? Just wait to see what it's like in 18 years, you buttholes. Then you'll be wishing you still had this team.
Oh,
thanks, God.
Gosh. All right, bud. Talk to you.
See ya. Ryan McGuffey, coordinating producer for live events, NBC Sports Chicago, and the co-host for the White Sox Talk podcast. He is on Twitter at Ryan McGuffey. He is wonderful. And yes, Matt Snyder with CBS Sports wrote about Cy Young candidates right now. And he said, Chris Sale is my favorite right now, even though he does not have a top 10 workload in the National League. All of his other numbers are better than everybody else. You know, the fielding independent numbers, the ERA, the strikeouts, he is there. So I am absolutely rooting for Chris Sale. What a great thing for a guy who had dealt with all those injuries, especially recently, for him to be doing what he's doing now. Go get it, man. Go win that Cy Young and then shred those jerseys with a hunting knife when it's over. I'm Chris Ronji. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. We broadcast live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to The Score.
Bye. We're back with host Chris Ronji on The Score.
The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at RosenHyundai.com. I am Chris Ronji until 9 o'clock tonight. The Bears game is ongoing. They're playing in their preseason. No starters tonight. Tyson Bagent did go out there for a series. Brett Rypien is in after that. And the Bears lead, in case you were wondering, it is 10-7 over the Kansas City Chiefs, who do not have Patrick Mahomes or their starters playing either. That's what's going on tonight. So we still are talking Bears here, and a text message says, and I got to tell you, I absolutely appreciate this text. From an 815, there is no one else I'd want to listen to while watching totally useless football. Hey, thank you. What a great compliment. That made me feel really, really nice. You're welcome to text us, 312-644-6767. I posed the question earlier, am I selfish and or stupid for hoping that Caleb Williams is the only one of the good quarterbacks of this rookie class? Because I'm feeling a little jealous that people are talking about the others too. I wanted it to just be my team and my quarterback. Just let me have this. Let me have the rookie quarterback that's the good one out of this class? No, it might be Bo Nix and Drake May and Jaden Daniels. They all might be great. It just seems unfair. We finally get a guy, and now we got to share the spotlight with other people. I ain't having it. And a text message says that I'm not being selfish. Finally, the gal, you got her at the prom, right? With a great personality, finally getting some attention from gentlemen callers, and you are basking in all of its glory. Okay, I think I get where you're coming from. This texter says it is absolutely selfish and stupid, but I am 100% with you. See? Thank you. And here's a level-headed text who is probably the most correct. This texter from a 414 says comparison is the thief of joy. And you know what? That is correct. I should just enjoy what I have. Let's just worry about Caleb Williams, and that's it. Let's not worry about how good Jaden Daniels is. That's totally fair. Thank you for helping me. Thank you for setting me straight. Before we get to a phone call, actually, no, we're going to get to the phone call, but then after the fact, I mentioned earlier in the show, Sean King, former NFL quarterback, was on The Score earlier on the Bernstein and Holmes show, and I want you to hear some of it, because as excited as we are about Caleb this, Caleb that, he's great. Oh my God, did you see that play? This is one of the first people I have heard who really threw a lot of cold water on it. And I was listening to it earlier thinking, oh God, no, no. I think you need to hear it. And you can be upset with it or not. It doesn't matter, but you need to hear it. I'm going to bring it to you in a moment. First, Popeye from Riverside, you are on The Score. Hello, Popeye.
Hey, Ranger. Just first off, I just want to apologize about my antics last weekend.
After the softball game, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. Not good.
I'm glad you're okay.
I appreciate that, and it was out of character on my end. But I do want to talk about the Bears and the offense, and I think the Bears are doing it wrong with Rome. I think he needs to be a bigger part of this offense, as in the number one receiver over Keenan and DJ. I think his development will benefit that. And I think the last 5-6 years of receivers have shown that rookies can come in and dominate early in the NFL. And I think what they're doing, a disservice for him, is enormous.
Do you think they haven't targeted him enough?
I think they won't target him enough is what I'm saying. I think that, you know, DJ is great, but I mean, end of the day, DJ got signed to a long-term contract, which is terrific, but DJ needs to be a slot receiver. Rome needs to be the focus, and he needs targets left and right. He needs 10-plus targets a game. I think it's disservice to him and the Bears if he doesn't.
Okay, and I appreciate the phone call, Popeye. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think what they want to do with him is just sort of ease him into it, and he eventually may become their number one. He may be their number one eventually. And I think it's okay to ease him into the whole thing. You know, give him a few targets a game. Maybe the workload increases as the season goes on and he becomes more open because DJ and Allen and Komet are getting more of the attention. Probably going to be a lot of zone played against these guys, too. So we'll see. Right. We'll see how open he is. I think that Caleb naturally eventually will start to gravitate toward him. I think it's going to happen. I wouldn't be too worried about how it goes up front, though. But I fully get where you're coming from. Eventually, Rome Odunze is going to be a huge part of this offense. I feel pretty certain of that. Appreciate the phone call, Popeye. All of you are welcome to visit with us tonight. I mentioned the Sean King interview. And I do want you to hear that. He was on Bernstein and Holmes earlier. We're not going to play the entire thing. I think the important parts you should hear as he dissects Caleb Williams' game and what he thinks of him. And it's been nothing but glowing praise from most people in football. This one, a little different path. You're going to hear it when we come back on The Score.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
You are going to want to tune in to Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi tomorrow at 12:25 p.m. That's in the afternoon. You'll hear from Bears head coach Matt Eberflus after tonight's conclusion of the preseason. Yes, they are playing a preseason game right now. One of those games in which none of the starters played. In Kansas City, Bears and Chiefs, 10-7, the Bears lead at the two-minute warning. Getting ready to end the first half. So that's cool. It's cool that that's happened. Also, I suppose it doesn't really matter all that much. Brett Rypien, 7-for-9, 58 yards passing. Tyson Bagent, 3 of 6. So Rippon with a rating of 93.5 and Bagent an 83.3 rating on the night. So that's what we've been looking at. Anyway, we've still talked some Bears anyway on the show just because, hey, it's preseason. This game doesn't count. So maybe you're listening to us and watching that game. And if you are, we totally appreciate it. Now, you're on a Caleb Williams high. I know you are. You should be, rightfully so. We've seen some things that need to be cleaned up in the preseason, but we've also seen some things that are really, truly exciting, which has us believing the Bears finally have the guy. They finally have a real, legitimate quarterback, potentially the best quarterback eventually in the NFC North. I think we all kind of feel that's what's going to happen, right? Or we think, we're hoping. Now, lest you be excited about your new Bears quarterback and how good and amazing and wonderful he is, let former quarterback Sean King throw some ice cold water on that for you. He talked with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi earlier today on The Score. And I got to tell you, when I was listening to this, the first two words that popped into my brain were, oh no. Here he is, Sean King, and the first thing he was asked is what he wants to see at this point from a rookie quarterback.
So for me, all I'm looking for are little idiosyncrasies that the casual fan has no idea this transpiring. The first thing I want to see is how calm are they when it becomes chaotic? Does it look like they're able to go through the progressions within the structure of the pocket and deliver the ball accurately? That's the first thing I'm looking for, because sustainable quarterback play starts there. And if I see that, then I look at, do they have other elite traits? And this is where you get to Caleb, who I'm assuming we're going to talk about a lot. I think he struggles. He struggles really, really badly with that first concept that I'm looking to see, but he excels at the elite trait part, if that makes sense.
Can you give an example of what you're seeing out of, like, maybe the struggle? It doesn't have to be super specific, but just illustrate.
I had Jaden Daniels rated as number one quarterback in this draft. Go look at Jaden Daniels' preseason tape and then look at Caleb Williams. Everything Jaden does so far has been within the structure of the offense for the most part. Yet we know he has the same elite abilities that Caleb does. Fast forward, when you look at the Bears, Caleb seems to still be struggling throwing the ball on time in rhythm. And his spectacular plays are because of his spectacular talent. So I made an analogy the other day. I was hosting on The Odd Couple on Fox Sports for I was filling in for Chris Broussard. It was me and Rob Parker. Caleb Williams reminds me of Anthony Edwards. Think about Anthony Edwards as a rookie. All he really could do was dunk. He was magnificent. Now, he was on the highlights all the time, but all he could really do is dunk. Now look at him fast forward to now. He's a part of the Olympic team. He's a well-rounded player. He's considered one of the top 10 players in the world with the potential to be the best. I think that's what Caleb's career arc is going to look like as well.
Well, if you don't trust his ability right now to get it out on time from the pocket, that means people are going to have to probably downgrade their Bears expectations.
Oh, yeah, y'all are delusional. Like, y'all are on Cowboy fan base delusion level. Every Bear fan I talk to, they're talking NFC championship. They're talking double-digit win season. For context, I have the Bears going 7-10. Because I'm more of a realistic person. I think they're a better overall team from a talent standpoint, but I do think they have some pieces. They got to figure out how they fit. They've got some young players who are going to take time to develop. The division is a lot tougher than it has been. Green Bay and Detroit looking like they're both capable of being Super Bowl teams, and Minnesota having everything but probably consistency at quarterback. So I think when you put all those things together, I think the expectations are high, but hey, I'm not going to rain on the Bears parade. I get the energy of the last decade and how they're starving, but it is cowboy delusional.
So Sean, if these are some of the things that you feel like you're seeing with Caleb, how do you suspect that defenses, once we get into the regular season, are going to try to defend him? How do you keep him from using some of the special and force him into a box?
I mean, the one thing about defenses is they take on the personality of their defensive coordinator. So a heavy blitz guy is not going to play zone because Caleb's the quarterback. A heavy zone guy is not going to go blitz crazy because Caleb's the quarterback. What they're going to do is they're going to approach the game just like teams approach when they play Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray or some of these other guys who are athletic and talented. It's not like Caleb, you know, is the only talented quarterback in the NFL that can run and throw. So he's going to get a lot of different things, some man, some zone. Was that Shane Waldron that was doing the press conference when I came on?
No, that was Tyson Bagent. The Bagency was talking about
the backup.
Oh, okay. Because he said something that I had never heard before. He said, keep my head in the middle of the field and then make a decision in a system where I don't have to throw a perfect ball. I've never in all of my life heard anybody say that before. So that kind of caught me off guard.
Why? What sounds weird or wrong about it?
You're striving to throw the perfect ball every play. Like, that's the whole thing about being an elite quarterback is ball location. That's why C.J. Stroud is so great. C.J. Stroud plays within the system. When have you ever seen him throw an inaccurate ball? It's almost like, wow, if you see it. Like, that's what separates. If you look at all the top guys in the National Football League, the ones that win the most are the ones that can locate the football consistently at an elite level.
So I want to ask you, too, when you're talking about trying to be more consistent inside the system before trying to do the cool stuff that makes the highlight reels, how important is it to try to establish good habits early for him, for Caleb Williams?
I think it's very important, and I think it's a deficiency that he has. And listen, I'm not down on Caleb Williams. Just because I have Jaden Daniels right higher than him doesn't mean I don't like Caleb Williams. But I think he needs to be coached really hard about seeing the field. I don't think he sees the field consistently. If you just watch him and you stop being a fan for a second when you watch him and start being really critical of what he does the first 2 seconds after the ball is snapped, it never really seems like he's able to diagnose what the defense is doing, make a decision where to throw the ball, anticipate where the ball should go, and let it loose. And I'm not saying he can't get to that. I'm just saying right now, as we said in August of 2024, if I'm watching from a distance, if I'm looking at all the USC film, if I'm looking at what I've seen so far in the preseason, for some reason it doesn't happen like that. He's much more comfortable kind of pump faking to the right, doing a silhouette, making a guy miss, start stopping, then finding somebody in the scramble drill. He just seems more comfortable than when it's the first 2 seconds after the ball is snapped within the structure of everything.
I mean, for a Bears fan who's listening to you, Sean, they might think that you're describing the last quarterback.
Well, see, here's the difference between Caleb and Justin. Caleb's more quarterback than Justin was. Justin's more runner than Caleb is, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, Justin's default is going to be scramble to gain yards. Caleb's default is scramble to make explosive plays in the passing game. And then he will run every now and then. So that's kind of where they're different.
What's the difference between true
All right, so that is Sean King visiting with Bernstein and Holmes and Rahimi today on 670 The Score. A little, as I said, cold water on Caleb Williams. And I had the exact same thought that Lawrence did when he's talking about him having difficulty processing or seeing the entire field. My thought was, oh, God, no, please, let's not be. Oh, God. I have to hope it's better than what was happening in Chicago before. I have to hope that Caleb Williams is going to end up being much, much, much better. As much as I love Fields, and I hope he does well in Pittsburgh, I have to believe this situation is better. Mark Grody disagreed a little bit with King, saying he thinks he does do that better, and he would love to watch a game with King and watch him analyze, and I totally agree. So we will see how it goes, but you're going to have to wait a while because there will not be a Caleb Williams game until September 8th. That is 17 days away. We got some time, kids, before the season gets underway. Thanks for listening. I'm not sure when I'll be back on with you, But you can follow me on Twitter at Chris Ranji. If you would like, I'd love to hear from you. Want to thank Tyler Farengel for producing the program tonight. Patrick Finley, Tony Andracki, Ryan McGuffey, and Mark Grody. Have a great one. Don't forget, Eberflus is on the score tomorrow at 12:25. You're going to want to tune in for that. Have a terrific rest of your night. Hey, the Bears are leading the Chiefs 20-7. Wow. I hope this game counts. Talk to you sometime soon. Chris Ranji on the score.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on the score.
You are going to want to tune in to Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi tomorrow at 12:25 p.m. That's in the afternoon. You'll hear from Bears head coach Matt Eberflus after tonight's conclusion of the preseason. Yes, they are playing a preseason game right now, one of those games in which none of the starters played. In Kansas City, Bears and Chiefs, 10-7, the Bears lead at the two-minute warning in the getting ready to end the first half. So that's cool. It's cool that that's happened. Also, I suppose it doesn't really matter all that much. Brett Rypien, 7 for 9, 58 yards passing. Tyson Bagent, 3 of 6. So Rypien with a rating of 93.5 and Bagent an 83.3 rating on the night. So that's what we've been looking at. Anyway, we've still talked some Bears anyway on the show just because, hey, it's preseason. This game doesn't count. So maybe you're listening to us and watching that game. And if you are, we totally appreciate it. Now, you're on a Caleb Williams high. I know you are. You should be, rightfully so. We've seen some things that need to be cleaned up in the preseason, but we've also seen some things that are really, truly exciting, which has us believing the Bears finally have the guy. They finally have a real legitimate quarterback, potentially the best quarterback eventually in the NFC North. I think we all kind of feel that's what's going to happen, right? Or we think, we're hoping. Now, lest you be excited about your new Bears quarterback and how good and amazing and wonderful he is, let former quarterback Sean King throw some ice cold water on that for you. He talked with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi earlier today on the score. And I got to tell you, when I was listening to this, the first two words that popped into my brain were, oh no, here he is, Sean King. And the first thing he was asked is what he wants to see at this point from a rookie quarterback.
So for me, all I'm looking for are little idiosyncrasies that the casual fan has no idea this transpiring. The first thing I want to see is how calm are they when it becomes chaotic? Does it look like they're able to go through the progressions within the structure of the pocket and deliver the ball accurately? That's the first thing I'm looking for, because sustainable quarterback play starts there. And if I see that, then I look at, do they have other elite traits? And this is where you get to Caleb, who I'm assuming we're going to talk about a lot.
I think he struggles
really, really badly with that first concept that I'm looking to see, but he excels at the elite trait part, if that makes sense.
Can you give an example of what you're seeing out of, like, maybe the struggle? It doesn't have to be super specific, but just illustrate.
I had Jaden Daniels rated as number one quarterback in this draft. Go look at Jaden Daniels' preseason tape and then look at Caleb Williams. Everything Jaden does so far has been within the structure of the offense for the most part. Yet we know he has the same elite abilities that Caleb does. Fast forward, when you look at the Bears, Caleb seems to still be struggling throwing the ball on time in rhythm. And his spectacular plays are because of his spectacular talent. So I made an analogy the other day. I was hosting on The Odd Couple on Fox Sports for I was filling in for Chris Broussard. It was me and Rob Parker. Caleb Williams reminds me of Anthony Edwards. Think about Anthony Edwards as a rookie. All he really could do is dunk. He was magnificent. Now, he was on the highlights all the time, but all he could really do is dunk. Now look at him fast forward to now. He's a part of the Olympic team. He's a well-rounded player. He's considered one of the top 10 players in the world with the potential to be the best. I think that's what Caleb's career arc is going to look like as well.
Well, if you don't trust his ability right now to get it out on time from the pocket, that means people are going to have to probably downgrade their Bears expectations.
Oh, yeah, y'all are delusional. Like, y'all are on Cowboy fan base delusion level. Every Bear fan I talk to, they're talking NFC championship. They're talking double-digit win season. For context, I have the Bears going 7-10 because I'm more of a realistic person. I think they're a better overall team from a talent standpoint, but I do think they have some pieces. They got to figure out how they fit. They've got some young players who are going to take time to develop. The division is a lot tougher than it has been. Green Bay and Detroit looking like they're both capable of being Super Bowl teams, and Minnesota having everything but probably consistency at quarterback. So I think when you put all those things together, I think the expectations are high. But, hey, I'm not going to rain on the Bears parade. I get the energy of the last decade and how they're starving, but it is Cowboy delusional.
So Sean, if these are some of the things that you feel like you're seeing with Caleb, how do you suspect that defenses, once we get into the regular season, are gonna try to defend him? How do you keep him from using some of the special and force him into a box?
I mean, the one thing about defenses is they take on the personality of their defensive coordinator. So a heavy blitz guy is not going to play zone because Caleb's the quarterback. A heavy zone guy is not going to go blitz crazy because Caleb's the quarterback. What they're going to do is they're going to approach the game just like teams approach when they play Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray or some of these other guys who are athletic and talented. It's not like Caleb, you know, is the only talented quarterback in the NFL that can run and throw. So he's going to get a lot of different things, some man, some zone. Was that Shane Waldron that was doing the press conference when I came on?
No, that was Tyson Bagent. The Bagency was talking about
the backup.
Offense.
Oh, okay. Because he said something that I had never heard before. He said, keep my head in the middle of the field and then make a decision in a system where I don't have to throw a perfect ball. I've never in all of my life heard anybody say that before. So that kind of caught me off guard.
Why? What sounds weird or wrong about it?
You're striving to throw the perfect ball every play. Like, that's the whole thing about being an elite quarterback is ball location. That's why C.J. Stroud is so great. C.J. Stroud plays within the system. When have you ever seen him throw an inaccurate ball? It's almost like, wow, if you see it. Like, that's what separates. If you look at all the top guys in the National Football League, the ones that win the most are the ones that can locate the football consistently at an elite level.
So I want to ask you, too, when you're talking about trying to be more consistent inside the system before trying to do the cool stuff that makes the highlight reels, how important is it to try to establish good habits early for him, for Caleb Williams?
I think it's very important, and I think it's a deficiency that he has. And listen, I'm not down on Caleb Williams. Just because I have Jaden Daniels rate higher than him doesn't mean I don't like Caleb Williams. But I think he needs to be coached really hard about seeing the field. I don't think he sees the field consistently. If you just watch him and you stop being a fan for a second when you watch him and start being really critical of what he does the first 2 seconds after the ball is snapped, it never really seems like he's able to diagnose what the defense is doing, make a decision where to throw the ball, anticipate where the ball should go, and let it loose. And I'm not saying he can't get to that. I'm just saying right now, as we said in August of 2024, if I'm watching from a distance, if I'm looking at all the USC film, if I'm looking at what I've seen so far in the preseason, for some reason it doesn't happen like that. He's much more comfortable kind of pump faking to the right, doing a silhouette, making a guy miss, start stopping, then finding somebody in the scramble drill. He just seems more comfortable than when it's the first 2 seconds after the ball is snapped. We're in the structure of everything.
I mean, for a Bears fan who's listening to you, Sean, they might think that you're describing the last quarterback.
Well, see, here's the difference between Caleb and Justin. Caleb's more quarterback than Justin was. Justin's more runner than Caleb is, if that makes sense. Sure. Like Justin's default is going to be scramble to gain yards. Caleb's default is scramble to make explosive plays in the passing game. And then he will run every now and then. So that's kind of where they're different.
Well, it's the difference between true
All right, so that is Sean King visiting with Bernstein and Holmes and Rahimi today on 670 The Score. A little, as I said, cold water on Caleb Williams. And I had the exact same thought that Lawrence did when he's talking about him having difficulty processing or seeing the entire field. My thought was, oh, God, no, please, let's not be, God. I have to hope it's better than what was happening in Chicago before. I have to hope that Caleb Williams is going to end up being much, much, much better. As much as I love Fields, and I hope he does well in Pittsburgh, I have to believe this situation is better. Mark Grody disagreed a little bit with King, saying he thinks he does do that better, and he would love to watch a game with King and watch him analyze, and I totally agree. So we will see how it goes, but you're going to have to wait a while because there will not be a Caleb Williams game until September 8th. That is 17 days away. We got some time, kids, before the season gets underway. Thanks for listening. I'm not sure when I'll be back on with you, but you can follow me on Twitter at Chris Ranji if you would like. I'd love to hear from you. Want to thank Tyler Farrigal for producing the program tonight. Patrick Finley, Tony Andracki, Ryan McGuffey, and Mark Grody. Have a great one. Don't forget, Eberflus is on The Score tomorrow at 12:25. You're going to want to tune in for that. Have a terrific rest of your night. Hey, the Bears are leading the Chiefs 20-7. Wow. I hope this game counts. Talk to you sometime soon. Chris Ranji on The Score.